Sled Dog Podcast, Episode 4, Interview with Didi Jonro. Hello and welcome to the Sled Dog Podcast. This is Tim.
And this is Gina. And this is the podcast that makes you laugh, listen, linger, and love dog sledding.
Nice, you got four that time.
Yes, I did. Because all these things really make me think about our upcoming interview.
Oh yeah, it's a good one too. We interviewed with Didi Jonro, which I'm almost sure that everybody knows Didi. And if you're brand new to dog sledding, you might not. So just Google Didi Jonro and you'll see her name everywhere. She's a fantastic musher, a fantastic person. I just really enjoyed listening to her. And she's got some great insights, not only on dog sledding, but a great perspective on life. So I think you'll really enjoy the interview today.
One thing I want to mention, the reason that we got to know Didi so well was actually through her book, Iditarod Dreams, that she co-authored with Lou Friedman. Talks a lot about Didi's life, how she began, how she ran different types of races, what she did. You'll learn about dog sledding. You'll learn about Didi. It's a great book. You really should grab it.
You can go right on our site, the www.sleddogpodcast.com, and click on the Amazon link to get that book. And we'll also put it in the show notes if you want to find it directly. But it's an interesting book. It talks about her adventures even overseas when she did, was it the Alperod?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very interesting on some of the stories that happened and how it was a completely different race, on how it was structured differently and some of the challenges that she had to overcome. So let's go ahead and get to that interview. And we just want to say thank you, Didi, in advance for a wonderful interview and hope you all enjoy it. So I guess start off, what would you like to tell people about yourself? Who is Didi?
You know, I think it's kind of hard when you're trying to describe who you are and you've been living with yourself for 53 years and you're thinking, I don't know. And I just kind of like am who I am and, you know, I'm uniquely my own person. One thing I would say is that I've never had anything come easy to me in life. Everything seems to have been quite an effort. When I was younger, my father was career army, so I was born while they were stationed in Greece, and they had flown my mother to Germany. I started elementary school while we were living in Ethiopia, and junior high while we were living in Okinawa, and graduated from high school in Northern Virginia right after my father was done with a tour in Vietnam. We moved 20 times in 22 years. My
wow.
Core family was really my anchor, but I wasn't raised with an opportunity to spend much time around any kind of extended family. My family is small. My dad is an only child, and my mom was one of two. We don't have, you know, big family reunions and big family things to think about. So from that background, dogs have become, at a really young age, were my anchor, my best friends, the friend that could move with me, that could hear my secrets and keep my secrets and give me, something consistent in my life besides my three other family members. And
did you have huskies early on, or did you have a lab?
No, we lived in the first dog I guess I ever had was a little dachshund mix in Greece, and my mom said that was stolen from us. And then the next night they left some other kind of mutt pup, and that was our next dog. And then I had a Brittany Spaniel when I was younger, and I had German Shepherds are what I remember the most as kids.
Oh, wow.
And then a Pekingese that my grandmother raised, and we could only have one because we traveled so much,
moved so much.
But then in high school, went to the Humane Society and adopted two at that point, you know, dogs that had a hard start in life, and they were both poodle something crosses, poodle terrier or poodle cocker spaniel crosses. And those were the two dogs that, as kids at 17, we brought to Alaska.
Okay.
And then I went to the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, and those are probably the only years of my life that I didn't have my own pet. And when I graduated from from college, I got a Labrador, my first Labrador. And that lab was the one I had when my husband had a Samoyed, and I had a lab when we got married, and our anniversary will be 30 years and 10 days.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So we started our our marriage with a Labrador and a Samoyed, and that was, you know, two dogs. So that was the big, that was my big jump. And then I didn't get a five-dog team until 79. I got my first little five-dog team and was just planning on traveling with them recreationally, and that all of that story is in the book I did about
Dreams. Dreams, yeah.
But, you know, it went from that to wanting to just test them with the villagers, you know, because we were living in Western Alaska, and kind of see how they did. And that ended up being, then, 80 was my first Iditarod, and I've now just signed up for my 26th Iditarod.
I know, and we're so excited. And you went from a five-dog team to the Iditarod. I mean,
yeah, in one season.
That's, that is amazing.
It's probably not a good idea, but that's what I did.
You know, I never found the stats on how you did in the first race. Was that just an incredible...
24th my rookie year.
Wow, that is fantastic. Out of all those dogs, do you have a most memorable dog or a dear friend?
You know, that's, it's hard to say because there's some dogs that have... Probably the first dog I had that really, you know, had my heart was a leader named Ruby. And she was a really special dog to me. Just she had her, you know, challenges, but she was uniquely my dog, and because they were all, I got them all as adults.
Okay.
And started with those five dogs as adults, and you know, some of them had pretty testing personalities, but Ruby was my first leader that really I felt that relationship with. You know, and then I had four dogs in that team that were all from the same litter. They were really special. Libra, Taurus, Virgo. I can't remember. They were all that theme.
Yeah.
And,
now, have you had a lot of litters yourself? Or have you?
I didn't really start raising my own puppies until I moved. I raised a few litters in Bethel, but until I moved to Willow, which was in 88, fall of 88. When we were in Bethel, we had a very confined dog lot because we lived in the floodplain. So we built our dog lot out of the old boardwalk and lashed it together, and our dogs were up on platform.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, and every spring that would flood and we would move them a couple of miles away until after the flood was over, and then we'd move them back. So we had to keep it confined to, I think it was 24 dogs that I had to keep.
Just because there was
so
much.
And, you know, I never could have more than that because I didn't have, my platform couldn't keep more than that. So I didn't really raise dogs. My own puppies. I'd raise maybe a litter every couple of years.
Who in these earlier days, did you have particular mentors or are you kind of an independent person? Or?
Well, you know, in my situation, I was a girl trying to run dogs in a cultural setting that didn't really encourage girls. And so that wasn't, you know, I didn't get a lot of local encouragement. I wouldn't say that. I mean, that's not really a fair way to put it. It was one of those deals where you knew that it was best to keep your mouth shut and learn by watching. Because that was, we were living in Bethel, and that was a Yupik Eskimo, primarily Yupik Eskimo community, and the native people they're not real chatty. That is the, was the last part of the state of Alaska to be colonized. So, you know, their native language was, they didn't all speak, and they mostly visited and stuff in their native language in Yupik. So, you know, I understood a little Yupik, but not enough to have them, you know, explain a lot of things to me in it. And so I mostly would just watch and try to learn from them that way. And then the white guys that ran dogs there weren't all that supportive. So, you know, I didn't really have any mentors in Bethel, no. There was one guy that in recent years has gotten to be a little closer to me, but he wasn't all that close then.
So once you got into the Iditarod, was there anybody that kind of, you know, showed you the ropes or helped you understand the big race?
My rookie year, the guys that helped me on the trail the most were the native drivers, the Athabascan drivers. There was Don Honey, Rudy Demoski, and Ken Chase and Warner Vent. And they were the guys that really, you know, kind of watched out for me and encouraged me. Joe Senior stayed with us for the first Cusco, which was my first long-distance race, and that was a couple of months before my first Iditarod, and so I had a little exposure to Joe Senior, but not that much, just because we lived so far away.
Right.
You know, I really didn't have that much, and Susan didn't, she didn't really, you know, give me much time until I had been in it a few years. Kind of like, you know, people come and go. And she hadn't yet been, you know, the top of it yet. And she was still guarding her progress.
Sure.
And, you know, she wasn't easily giving stuff away. And she didn't know, you know, are you going to just be one of the ones that just passes through the sport, or are you going to stay? And
Amen.
She and I really, you know, united several years later, before we did that. I think the first year I ran a group of Susan's dogs, I leased some dogs from her and trained young dogs for her in 87, and that was really the first year that a friendship struck up.
Now, I know most of our listeners know you for the Iditarod race, but before we move on to present day things, I wanted to touch on the Alparod. Actually, when we read Iditarod Dreams, that was one thing that interested me the most. That race just sounded grueling. I mean, it was amazing. Do you miss that race or have anything more to add to that?
That race was incredibly challenging for me. You know, it was the first time I raced in a different style other than, you know, my little bit of experience with Rendezvous, which hadn't been all that successful. But, you know, I was going totally different style of racing, basically kind of a sprint, you know, lighter sled, different dogs, basically. Nowadays, our dogs could be multiple discipline, but in those days, we were running such heavy-fronted dogs that, you know, they would have crippled in Alpirod, something that steep. And so, you know, I had to really get a different structure of dog. And then there was the challenge of traveling in Europe with dogs.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really navigating in different countries and different monetary, you know, values, and it was very challenging.
We were on the edge of our seat as my wife was reading that to the girls, and we were all sitting there just on the edge of our seat the entire section. So it was great. Well, my daughter Elizabeth has a quick question for you.
Uh-huh.
Elizabeth, go ahead.
Hi, Dee Dee. I am 12 years old, and I was always wondering, how do you go to the bathroom during the Iditarod on the trail?
Well, you know, being able to take care of those things has a lot to do with the efficiency of your layers of clothing. So I have, you know, my clothing makes it so that I'm able to take care of that while I'm still running on the runners.
Oh, good. Very tactfully put. Thank you. When she asked that, I'm like, how are we going to ask that? That's good.
Well, you know, it's not an uncommon question. I get that question a lot, you know, but, you know, it's why I don't wear a one-piece snowsuit.
Right.
Right.
Because in a windstorm, that's not so efficiently handled, and it's cold.
No, and so. It's cold, yes.
The 40 below is what gets us, so my.
Well, let's switch on to the present a little bit. We just want to, like, kind of shift gears and think about the present. So,
well, what did you do in the past that you don't do now? Like, I mean, I'm sure your dogs are different and things, but are there any other specific things that just...
You could give advice and say, yeah, you know, I got past this, and this was a big hurdle for me to get past, and now I'm doing this.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that have changed since I first started running dogs. When I first started running dogs, we screwed our runners on. You know, there was no such thing as quick change runners. We, you know,
oh,
we screwed UMHW on the bottom. We didn't have different surfaces for different snow types and weather types. We used Coleman stoves. We didn't use the alcohol burners that we had now, and there was a lot of moving parts that could freeze up when it was cold. We taped our booties on. We didn't have Velcro booties, you know, Velcro tops on the booties. We had a different kind of material that wore out, you know, and so there was a lot of taping and untaping with athletic tape, you know, in cold weather. That was something that was a problem. Our headlamps were different than they are now, and they were an issue. There were lots of things that are a lot better now, equipment-wise, that, you know, made a difference. I think one of the most substantial differences is what we have available to us now for feeding our dogs. In the early years, you know, we fed our dogs, you know, salmon, and I fed a lot of salmon and rice with just some kibbled product, but the kibbled product was, you know, there was nothing available like, you know, the premium racing products that are available today. For instance, the Eagle Ultra is basically almost a one-stop nutritional component, you know, and that wasn't the case at all. We didn't have anything like that in the early years. So feeding our dogs is a lot more balanced, and I credit that with why our dogs are recovering so fast in a checkpoint now. Because it's, you know, they're able to receive, you know, basically a sports diet that's been researched to be absorbable and readily available to them. We didn't have anything like that in those days. We didn't know a lot about digestibility, about fiber products, you know, that are the fiber in their food. We didn't know about, you know, the vitamin E balance and vitamin C that was supposedly in their diet was a lot of times had a really long shelf life by the time we got it in rural Alaska, and so wasn't very much of it available to them. There was not as good of worming programs, you know, so there was a lot in healthcare and nutritional. And if I had one thing to say, I probably spent at least three times as much time feeding, preparing food and feeding as I do now, and probably never reached the level of, you know, fitness that these dogs have today.
Right. Even though you spent so much more time.
Yeah, didn't have all the balances that you have available to us now.
Well, and Alyssa has a question for you also, and that's right in line with this.
Hi, Dee Dee. My name's Alyssa, and I'm 10 years old, and I have a question for you. What kind of food do you feed the dogs with?
What's the name brand, and what kind of food is it?
Mm-hmm. I feed Eagle Ultra, and it's one of the, there's only two or three of the super premium products that are available today that were not available at all in 80 when we first started, that have been developed on the Iditarod Trail, actually with dogs under stress, but are used worldwide today for hunting dogs and herding dogs and a lot of the different working dogs, security dogs, but were actually originally formulated on the Iditarod Trail. And one of the things that makes our food different is the large calorie availability. So it's not just a 30-20, it's also got a lot more of a vitamin package with it and a lot more calories. So a regular house dog wouldn't want the Ultra product, for instance. It's for a dog that is going to be expending a lot of calories in a short period of time.
Do you still give them meat or fish or rice or anything else on the side?
I give them some fat. I add fat as the calorie needs are, you know, increased. But basically, no, I mean, probably 80% of my diet now is just a kibble product.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, and in the summer, like right now, I haven't fed any kind of fat or supplement to these dogs since March.
Right. They'd blow up real fast, wouldn't they? They'd
get
pretty heavy. Do you ever run your dogs recreationally, or do you feel like you're always preparing?
I think everything I do with them is preparing them. I do. Like, I'm running right now, and I'm only running 3 miles, but I'm constantly preparing them to be bonded to me.
Right.
So their training is, sometimes it's mental, sometimes it's physical, sometimes it's mental and physical, but they're always learning to respond to me.
And I'm just imagining, now you get to spend your full time with this, pretty much. Do you also have friends or people that help you with your chores and the kennel work?
Not in the summertime. I do it by myself, usually from April until September.
Okay.
My husband is a commercial salmon fisherman, so he's gone for several months in the summer as well.
Now, you used to do that also, didn't you?
I did.
Do you have any other current passions that you like to do or like to focus on?
I love triathloning. I love bike riding.
That is amazing.
You know, mountain climbing. I'm really like mountain hiking and trail running and, like I said, triathloning. Those are my passions.
Yes, you know, when you say that, I go, ugh, because I am not that strong. That is wonderful.
I'm not that strong, impressed. Really, either. I have to really, lower my goals a little now, just with everything that's happened over the years. But it's still my passion.
Yes.
How long does it take you to train to do a triathlon?
Well,
or do you just kind of do it day by day?
It took me, I used to have to spend about 6 hours a day training for Ironman last year. But for these shorter ones, it just only takes maybe 40 minutes a day or something. Depends on if it's a long day bike ride, if it's a swim, it's not that long.
Do you think that's a huge impact for the Iditarod, how good a shape you're in versus maybe somebody that's not in such a good shape? Is it going to be brutal on them?
Well, the whole thing is a commitment. It's a commitment from your own personal training to your discipline for taking care of your dogs. And so anything that you can do to make it take less out of you at any one point in time,
sense.
It pays dividends on the race. So, for instance, I don't have the upper body strength I used to have, nor do I have the upper body strength ever that some of my competitors have.
Right.
And so in order to compensate for that and not take quite so much out of me, I have to train my dogs to be partners with me in things like that. So that requires me to, like I said, my dogs are always in a learning mode. They're always learning to respond to me because I need them to. I need to be able to turn my team loose when I'm in trouble and get my load out from the, obstacle that I might be raft around or whatever, and then whistle them back to me it doesn't cost me so much energy, as I get older and as I have more issues to deal with, the more important that is. Well, when I was younger, the dogs didn't have to be quite so well trained in that area because I was able to physically lead them around a lot more and do things with them, and it's really a lot of fun. But today, I was hooking up dogs and I ran 28 dogs this morning and I could just call them to me. Most all of them, I could turn loose and lead them back to their house with a cookie. And, so they weren't yanking on me quite so much.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And, I'm in the process. This was my race team that I was working with today, and I'm in the process of teaching that to the yearlings so that then the rest of their life I'll be able to handle them that way.
Do you have a big fence around the kennel, or would they take off?
No,
for a little?
They just pick it up from each other.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
But it comes from, I really believe it comes from, you have the older dogs teach the younger dogs, and dog training is all about timing. It's really about setting them up to succeed, and then when they succeed, they get a lot of positive reinforcement.
Right.
And so, you really can minimize any of the negative, responses because, they want to please.
Right.
So, and then the other thing, too, is that when you have them when they're young, when you raise them, which most of these dogs, all dogs I've raised now, they learn to respect you when they're little and at their, in the puppy pen, and that respect stays there forever. So if they start to get in a big huff with each other and you verbally call them down and say, knock it off, they knock it off because when they were little, you were able to reinforce it without much, like I can take a puppy and just pick them up off the ground and go, I said no.
Right.
And they go, okay, I get it.
They remember.
Yeah.
Yes, that's good.
Is it stressful for you in this, you know, present day and age for being a well-known musher, or can you be pretty private and independent and get on with your day pretty easily?
It kind of depends. You know, there are settings when it's stressful. I don't mind though, because I don't have a different personality, you know, in the public or in private. Just sometimes I am private and I don't really feel good and I don't feel like having a real, you know, social hour, and somebody really, you know, wants to talk and stuff, and I don't feel good. I don't feel like it, but I don't want to seem, you know, snobby or something, you know.
Well, this last year in the when we're watching the video of the Iditarod, and a little child handed you a snow cookie. I don't know if you remember that, a big snow cookie. You know, that's the kind of thing, and you just handled it so graceful, and you could tell that, you know, this was a very busy time for you, and yet you slowed down and you said, oh, thank you, and you were just so wonderful. And I think that's why everybody, you know, just loves you so much. So we appreciate those kind of things.
Well, you know, that little girl was Susan Butcher's youngest daughter. I would have done it for anybody, but that was Susan's little girl.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's even better. Now I was going to start crying. Okay. Well, switching to the future a little bit, what do you foresee in the future? Where are you going to go?
Well, you know, I'm hoping that I will eventually be able to realize my dream and win the race before I retire. I don't know if that's what God has for me, but I'm not ready to, you know, give up trying yet. When it gets to the point where I'm not able to do the dogs justice, then, you know, I will retire from the race as far as being a competitor. And I would hope then to be able to still be involved with dogs the rest of my life. I would like to be able to do maybe some commentator work on the Iditarod, as, you know, a lot of retired athletes do. I would love to stay involved in training. I don't ever want to be without some dogs. But I'd like to be able to maybe train dogs for people and have some of my own. And, you know, I don't see myself wanting to live any place different. I don't want to retire and move out of Alaska. I don't want to retire and get rid of my dogs. I'm blessed because I'm in my passion.
Right.
And I don't want to part with it.
No, that makes
sense. I'd like to be able to do some things that would help rural Alaska, because my heart is in rural Alaska.
What do you mean by that?
I'd like to be able to work at the church camp up in Unalakleet. I'd like to be able to travel a little more to the villages when I have the time. And I'd like to start some more, you know, mushing programs in the villages.
That's wonderful.
Do you, for each race going into the race, do you have different goals?
Yes.
Each year, or each year is it,
well,
pretty much to win, and, you know, are, you know,
well,
as you approach
the
Iditarod?
There are different goals, because, I mean, it isn't me, it's the team. You know, I'm basically their coach. I'm a player coach. And so there are years when the team, as a young team, and, you know, to try to get them to first place would be an inappropriate goal for that team. You know, and also, like the year 2003, you know, I was just a few weeks out of chemotherapy. You know, it was unrealistic to have a goal to win. My goal was to finish the race, you know, and I was extremely satisfied with, you know, how that went, and actually very humbled by it. But, like, last year, you know, I really did feel like there was a team that could race to win last year and, you know, this past season. So I was very disappointed that it came out the way it did. But when I look back in retrospect and evaluate the entire season, I'm not too surprised, because there were a lot of things pulling at me this last winter that were taking a bigger bite out of me than I realized at the time. And even when I did realize it, I didn't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I wasn't in a situation that I could change things. So I've got a whole different structure for this season.
Okay.
And I think, you know, I tried to. I mean, one of the things about Iditarod, and I think it's a good lesson in life, is, you know, everybody competes on the same level with your own personal strengths and weaknesses. And it's up to you to maximize your strengths and minimize your weaknesses. And if you're not deadly honest with yourself about what those are, then you can't figure out how to best deal with them. And so, you know, with the exception of the current year champion, everybody's got something they can do something about. And, you know, if you race to the very best of your dog's abilities and your ability, and somebody else beats you, and, you know, that's happened to me a couple times that I know of, you know, you have to be satisfied. I mean, that's the best there was to do, you know. But if there are things that you can improve on, you know, it's up to you to figure out how to do that. And there was a lot that could be improved upon in the way things were handled last season. So,
you know, that kind of blows me away, because I think, okay, if we ever, you know, as a family, we ever get to the Iditarod, but to know that you've been in 25 and you still think there's so much to improve on, it's like, oh my goodness. that's amazing.
It's one of those
never-ending sports.
I definitely do. You know, I certainly don't have it, you know, down. I mean, I have a lot of things that, you know, I know work, and then I have some things that I feel that can be improved on, and then there is, you know, a level of luck that is in each year's competition. I mean, that's why you don't see Tiger Woods win every single golf tournament he's in, or, you know, any particular athlete be able to guarantee that they're going to dominate their sport, you know. And I've got a few things working against me physically now. I've got things working for me mentally. I think as you get older, you know, perhaps you get physically compromised, but you get mentally stronger. So, you know, like I told my husband, I said, there's areas that I'm not as physically strong as I used to be, but I'm a lot wiser, and I can utilize, you know, my wisdom to train, you know, to overcome some of those other issues.
What a great attitude. That's wonderful.
Now, what would you like to see in the future of this sport? Like, if you could say, this is the way it's going to be in the future, what would you like to see?
Well, my first priority is to see that the dogs are and stay the focus of the sport. It is all about the dogs. And, you know, if it weren't, I mean, that's what draws me to it 365 days a year. I only compete probably at the most maybe 20 days a year. But
amazing.
365 days a year, I'm involved with them. You know, like yesterday, for instance, I have about 82 dogs, and I would say probably 14, 15 of them are retired dogs. My oldest dog is Joby, 17, and he was the leader the last time I was second place in 98. You know, Joby's pretty old now, but my old dogs, I spay and neuter them so that they can be loose. And then we have 17 acres, and they just putz around and survey their domain, and, you know, they're not on any kind of containment unless we're not here on the place, and sometimes we have to put them in pens or, you know, then fasten them. But Job had, you know, like a little irritation on his legs, and so, you know, I gave him a bath yesterday with medicated soap and blew dry him, and I spent, you know, probably a couple hours yesterday grooming him. He's 17 years old. That's how I feel about my guys. They're, you know, I'm committed to them their entire life, not just their competitive life.
So, and you bait everybody once a week, or is it once a month? Just kidding.
depends on the dog. The older dogs have the tendency, their coats don't shed out as well sometimes. You know, he's old enough now that, you know, he looks like he's got a lot of spring in his step, but he doesn't shake. You know, his spine has got some spondylosis in it and stuff, and he doesn't shake it off as well and stuff, and so he's not shedding out as well. And, you know, so it just depends on the individual dog. Yeah, I've got I call it Kotzebue in a can, a big doggy groomer blow dryer that, you know, I can make sure that they get a lot of, you know, get the dander out of their coats. And like Ingra, today I was running. Ingra's a retired leader. She's, I think she's probably 9, and she ran as a loose leader today. That's her favorite thing to do, is to just run in front of the team, but she's not in the team.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Does she stay close, or does she run out ahead?
She runs out ahead, takes the commands out ahead.
Oh, that's great.
Wow, that's neat.
But that's the kind of commitment to the sport that, you know, to me, that's what our sport is about.
Yeah.
It is about the competitive animals, but it's about all the animals.
Do you think that dog sledding is going to continue to grow, or do you think it'll taper off at some point?
Well, I think it will continue to grow as more and more people understand how to enjoy their dogs. I don't think it'll always be, because, I mean, there's already a big class that's growing in the lower 48 called dry land racing, and yeah. Where they're racing their dogs without snow, but, you know, on carts and scooters and things like that, so that they can enjoy their dogs in locations where they don't ever have snow.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what I enjoy about my Labradors as well, and, you know, my Pekingese goes rafting with me and stuff. I like to share my life with dogs. Everything I do, from berry picking to, you know, running the Iditarod, is more fun when a dog is with me.
Yeah. That is wonderful. That is wonderful. Well, Christiana has a little question to ask you also. So, Christiana?
Hi, Dee Dee. I'm Christiana, and I'm 10 and a half.
Uh-huh.
And, I want to ask you a question. For young people like myself, what advice would you give to start mushing?
Well, the first thing I would say is it would be a good idea to read about it so that you had some idea what these dogs can do and like to do. And then I would, the next best thing that would be, if possible, is to find somebody that does the sport and to help them. Volunteer on a Saturday for an hour or so, something so that you can get some ideas of how it's done and you don't have to learn all by yourself. If you're not able to do that, it would be good to get a dog that knows how. That's what I did, and the dogs taught me, because I didn't know what I was doing, and the dogs taught me what to do.
Well, that's wonderful. And I think that's how we did it also. We were blessed with finding a family that wanted to get rid of, or sold us a couple of lead dogs right off the bat, and they were just still, that's who Shoni, our story dog, is all about. So we have a
yeah.
story that we talk about, and she's just a wonderful lead dog, and she taught us many, many things.
Yeah, and still does.
And still does. So, well, Dee Dee, is there anything else that you'd like to tell the listening audience about mushing, about yourself, anything?
One of the things that, because I love the sport so, because I love my dog so, there was a time when, and I think anything can fill this position, but there was a time when I got so passionate about the dogs, it kind of took the wrong priority in my life. You know, it's funny, you know better than that, but yet it's still, when you really, really enjoy something, if you're not careful, you have a tendency to get things in the wrong order. And I noticed that for that time that I felt that dogs were really my priority, I felt I needed to be 100% committed to them if I was going to try to be competitive with other people that were that committed. And yet, doing that, God never blessed that. I came to an understanding that the most important thing in my life is not my sled dogs, but it is the Lord, and that everything else follows naturally. He gave me this passion. He can bless this passion, but I had to put Him first. And, you know, it's hard when a lot of the events are on Sundays.
Right.
But I don't, with the exception of the Iditarod and big races, I don't race on Sundays, and I try to make it's more a personal commitment than a particular daytime. But, you have to keep things in order. I mean, we've had more than once, we've been faced with, you know, some life challenges. And we've realized that, once again, you know, God made dogs. God loves dogs. They're not, He doesn't want us not to have them or not to, you know, take care of them on Sundays. I had one young girl that was, you know, felt like she wasn't supposed to work on the Sabbath, and so she wasn't going to take care of sled dogs on the Sabbath. And I said,
right.
You know, that doesn't make sense. Would you not feed a baby on Saturday?
Yeah, exactly.
Sunday? I mean, you know, it doesn't, I mean, that just doesn't make sense. But she, you know, in her legalistic mind, it seemed like that was what was supposed to be. But on the other hand, putting them in their proper position. I mean, God didn't intend for, you know, people to work in the office 7 days a week either.
Exactly.
And I, you know, I love these guys, but I do know that they simply aren't the most important thing in the world. God is. But I also realize that it is, and this is another thing that, you know, it's a perspective that I come to try to care for my kennel with, is, you know, I'm really God's kennel owner here, kennel caretaker, and they are really his. They give them to me, and he takes them away when the time comes. And with that being the case, the way I care for them every single day is the way I honor him. So, you know, when you feel like, you know, maybe I don't want to go scoop today, or I don't want to, you know, I mean, that's, to me, that's being disrespectful to something that God has given me. I'm supposed to be good stewards of the blessings that he's given me, and I consider these dogs to be blessings.
Absolutely. That is absolutely wonderful. Is there anything else, Dee Dee? This has been absolutely a great time, not only for the recording, and I know our listeners are going to love it, but for my family and I, we are just very blessed to have you on with us and to hear what you're saying, because I think we all struggle that same battle of balance and knowing what's important and who's the most important thing in our lives is the Lord also, and making sure that our daughters raise up to learn that. And you've been a huge inspiration to us already, so thank you so much.
You know, I've seen an awful lot of marriages and an awful lot of families that have, having been in the sport as many years as I have, that have gone by the wayside, you know, for a particular finish in any some year's race. And I think that's so sad.
Yeah,
and, you know, when Mike was, when we were both critically injured 11 years ago in the car accident, my grandmother was killed in that accident. And we were coming from the Sled Dog Symposium at that time. You know, we just finished the symposium that afternoon, and we were headed home. And, you know, I had high plans for that season. And within a very short period of time, the plea of my heart and life was, God, please don't take Mike. Because he had already, my grandmother was dying next to me, and Mike was in the back seat, and I could hear him doing the same. And, you know, I would hope that most people wouldn't have to have that kind of a reality check, but that was a reality check. And, you know, Roxy took my sled dog team home. She met me in the emergency room. She took my sled dog team home that winter so that I could get well and I could help Mike get well. And for 6 weeks, I didn't even have my sled dogs here. I had my pet dogs, but not my sled dogs. And as much as everything had been motivated around those sled dogs in the wintertime, at that point in time, I couldn't even think about training them. Roxy would call and want to know what to do, what mileage to put on, and I would just be like, whatever you think. My whole focus was getting Mike well. And, you know, I really realized that if God were to call me to part with the dogs at that time, I knew that I could. Even though I didn't want to, I knew that I could, but I didn't want to part with my husband.
Amen. That's awesome. No, but priorities surface pretty quick for you, don't they? Well, thank you, Dee Dee, and we appreciate this. This has absolutely been the highlight of our year, I think, right now. So this is, I mean,
you have no idea how much we're praying for you in March, if you're ever wondering. We were,
well, I actually appreciate it because Lord knows I need it.
we know, and we really were, we were with you when you had to stop, and it was a, you know.
You know, I made a lot of mistakes.
A low night for us, and, so.
Well, you know, I made a lot of mistakes last winter, I know. But I know the one thing I didn't do wrong was to pull out at that time. Because in fact, I was starting hooking up the dogs, you know, this season, and Mike went, wow, you know, this team is strong. I don't know if we've ever had a fall team this strong. And that was just 14 of them, and I said, this is why I couldn't visualize taking them down the Farewell Gorge, you know, the Farewell Burn and down the gorge with broken hand. I just, it just seems like the stupidest thing that I would ever try. And if a dog were to get injured, you know, knowing that I was compromised, I could never, ever justify it.
No, you would hate yourself and
I would
be mad at yourself. And How are you doing, by the way? How is your hand?
My hand is healed. It's not going to ever be the same, but it wasn't all that great anyways. That finger was compromised anyways, and so it's going to be cold. But it's, you know, a finger is just a finger. I mean, it isn't any. I know, you know, other body parts are worse, so.
Right.
But I'm going to have to work at keeping it warm, that's for sure.
No, absolutely. Well, you know, the girls, sometimes they'll get bumped and bruised around the house here, and it's, you know, I'll just remember to tell them, you guys, a finger is just a finger, you know, a scratch is just a scratch. Remember what Dee Dee said.
We have to do that all the time anyway.
Yes.
So.
Just have a God-blessed and a wonderful day.
You're welcome, you guys, too. One of the things I would really encourage is there is a good opportunity for people that would like to get started in the sport with a trained dog. To, you know, contact one of the named drivers. I think sometimes they're nervous about doing that, but, you know, there are really nice dogs available most of the time. I know I have, you know, usually a couple of year that will be great for ski drawing, recreational junior mushers, you know, people that wanting to start in the sport with trained dogs.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And we couldn't have done it the way we've done it without it, especially because I have children. And I'm not going to send them out into the woods without a dog that knows or that I can trust. You know? Oh, that's
sure.
Really a good idea.
People are intimidated by the name, and
right.
So they'll think, no, they're going to be real expensive or, you know, I couldn't do that. I've always said, you know, I want, like when I buy dogs, and I do once in a while to add to my genetic pool and such, I don't, you know, it's easier to... I mean, I want a dog that I know somebody's been committed to from the beginning to the end, that it's had good nutrition from the time, you know, their parents had good condition, good nutrition, they're, you know, were raised in a good situation. So I go to kennels that are committed to their animals all the time.
Is funding for you now pretty hard? Is it still, is funding in the monetary side of dog sledding, is that always an issue?
It's always an issue because it's an expensive sport. It's an expensive sport, and there's not a, you know, a great deal of prize money, especially when you look at it in conjunction with, you know, golf or tennis or things
right.
like that. You know, we don't make anywhere like that kind of prize money or that kind of circuit.
Right.
But
we're not in it.
We're also in it for a different reason, I suspect.
Yeah,
that's for sure. That's for sure. You know, it is. It's the love of the dog, not the love of dropping the ball in the cup.
Right.
Or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Dee Dee. And want to
say
goodbye, girls?
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, girls.
Bye-bye.
All right. We'll be blessed.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that was awesome, wasn't it, Tim?
It was great.
Really brings to mind the scripture in the book of Matthew, chapter 6, verse 33. But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. What Dee Dee was talking about there in the end was how she began to put dog sledding and everything else first in her life, and all these things were not added under her.
No, I won't.
So when she switched it around and put God back first in her life, then the blessings started flow, and I can tell you we've done that many times, Tim. So
yeah, I guess the episode for this, to sum it up, would be, what are your priorities, and making sure that the right priorities in place, because time is short and it's so important that we just focus on the right things.
Absolutely.
So thank you, everybody, for listening. We so appreciate you as a listening audience. Give us any feedback you want. You can reach out to us at sleddog@vbs20.com or just go to www.sleddogpodcast.com and leave us some notes or leave us some comments. We'd greatly appreciate it. Have a great day.
God bless everyone.